I don't want to assume anything about this musician, because with his baby face, he could be underage, and so I don't want to make, but assuming he is of age, I just want to say there's something about a guy in a cowboy outfit that just makes me want to bone down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it means.
Don't make me say it.
I don't think either boys or girls bone down.
I've boned down plenty.
And on that note, welcome to Bone Bones.
We have a fair amount of boning down in the two chapters that we have to discuss today. Jamie and Tyrion.
Is it boning down or is it just boning?
Listen, Eric, it's boning down.
I've never heard that before. I'm not saying I'm skeptical. I am a little skeptical, but
Eric,
I didn't.
We're expanding your horizons, man.
Okay, yeah, dude.
Okay. That is what I look to you guys
to do.
When
a man loves a woman.
Okay.
Very much.
When a man.
Very much.
Boning, bone down.
They go to the movies.
Bones down on a woman.
Exactly.
Thank you guys for joining us today. Apologize for
Zach. You just really should not have shown this video. Clearly, it's gotten Kate all worked up.
I know. The music was sent to us by Yako from Budapest, where I will be moving very, very soon.
Really?
To bone down.
No.
You're going to bone down in Budapest.
Bone down to Budapest.
No, this is horrible. Today.
No, it's great.
For all of you listening at home that might be wondering, we're doing, for the first time in this book ever, the Dos Chapters.
Dos Chapters!
Dos Chapteros!
That means two. You heard that one? Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good.
I feel like dos is appropriate. It's like in the West, you know, it's like in New Mexico.
That's true.
Everything's a little bit more Espanol.
So this Jamie chapter, I want to talk to you guys about it. I have some feelings. I thought this Jamie chapter was excellent for the following reasons.
Oh, you thought it was excellent?
You thought it was
pretty good?
Yeah, I thought it was great. Because Jamie chapters tend to be about one of like three things, right? It's either Jamie thinking about fucking his sister, Jamie thinking about how cool he is at doing everything.
Even doing his sister.
He probably thinks he's pretty good at boning down. Even though he's only ever had sex with one lady, it does happen to be the only lady that he's spent any significant amount of time around, which is kind of impressive. Or thinking about how much of an ugly bitch Brienne is. Like, those are his three things that he thinks
three.
About. And
wench.
The more I think about how much he calls Brienne a wench, just like every time he calls her a wench, I'm like, fuck off, Jamie. Because I love Brienne. I do not think that she is a wench. But the fact that he even privately thinks is like, oh, the wench doesn't like to be reminded that she's a wench. Like, fucking shut up, man. When you call her a nobody wants to be reminded that they're a wench.
Yeah,
that's awful. But what I liked about this chapter, you see Jamie being, he has several times during this chapter, he strategizes and he thinks about stuff and he realizes, you know, what's going on in the subtext. He has the experience, this like casual, lazy
vacancy.
Experience where he has, he knows when people are full of shit. He can assess a situation very rapidly and see like, oh, they probably killed this person and there are probably bandits on the road and they're probably friends with this guy. And he doesn't even acknowledge it in his own head when he realizes it. He just like will say it out loud later and you'll be like, oh, he realized that way back in this chapter. I didn't even realize it and I'm in his head. So I really like how smart Jamie is in this chapter. But the thing I like most is that during the course of this chapter, he's realizing how smart Brienne is. Like, he thinks of her as this big cow of a woman who's just dumb and has a big sword and whatever. He's been underestimating her quite a bit, but they start coming to the same conclusions. And Jamie is a smart guy, so the fact that Brienne is agreeing with him without them having to discuss it, she's just taking the actions that he would have taken had he been in the same boat, so to speak. Man, they were in the same boat. And
they were on a boat, yep.
If he were in charge of the situation, he'd be making the same decisions she is. And he's starting to really show his respect for her. And I like that.
Kate, I agree with you, but I did quote I did have to save the here's the quote where as you say he's gaining respect for Brienne. Here's the quote. From page 154 in my book. Well, she may be ugly, but she's not entirely stupid.
Which is still like, oh, the worst. Like, Jamie's still so like
not yeah. all the way there. He has a way to go
yeah.
with her still, which is great. I mean, that though is the setting. Like, you have to learn where they're at, and that is where they're at. He's beginning to realize. As you're saying, I mean, when they have to choose which road they're going to take next, and, you know, she chooses the road that he would have taken,
yeah.
There's this real acknowledgement from him, at least in his mind, where he's like, oh, yeah, she's not dumb. Like, yeah. she's not going to yeah. just get us killed.
Yeah, because he realizes that the innkeeper is probably sending them down a road that's full of his friends because... Earlier in the chapter, he thought there was way too much horse shit in the stables. And he was like, there's a lot more horses that are somewhere that were shitting in the stable.
That's
and now there
shit.
Aren't. Yeah.
I know. So, fresh shit.
Yeah. And when I liked the sort of a double entendre there at some point when he's in the stable. Let me find this quote.
He says horse shit and expects her to catch his meaning.
The man who wasn't an innkeep rubbed his jaw. There's a smithy round back of the stable. Show me, Brienne said. Yes, said Jamie, and the sooner the better. There's far too much horse shit about here for my taste. I would hate yeah. to step in it.
Yeah.
He gave the wench a sharp look, wondering if she was bright enough to take his meaning, which I thought he was just like, this innkeeper is so fucking full of it. But I think what he actually meant was, there's a lot of horse shit here, yeah. and there's not a lot of horses, so yeah.
oh,
we should
like,
be careful.
Hint, hint, nudge,
exactly.
nudge.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Exactly.
That's cool. That's pretty, like, that's, like, third level
right?
brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. Good
It's
good
easy
stuff.
To forget that we're, I mean, this is, the last time we were with Jamie and Brienne, there was dead people hanging in a tree, mm-hmm. and other people in a much larger seafaring, river-faring vessel that wanted to destroy them and make them not alive anymore. Or at least take them back to River Run, whichever worked. So when they rode in to this air quotes inn, I wasn't expecting anyone to be there, let alone, you know, a family that has usurped the business. But they seem to know their new business pretty well, though. So I was impressed. I was impressed.
I feel like there's a few professions you would just learn just in case you find yourself inhabiting like a broken down inn, right? Mm-hmm. Or mm-hmm. with nobody there. I don't know.
One of the things I liked a lot about this chapter was the history. And you got a little bit of it in the very first couple paragraphs. And then you got a bit more when Jamie is going through what happened that fateful day in King's Landing. And I just like how it's so interwoven into the text, right? So it starts out with Sir Cleos when he's talking about this Inn of the Kneeling Man. And he says... It stands upon the very spot where the last king in the north knelt before Aegon the Conqueror to offer his submission. That's him on the sign, I suppose. And it goes on after that to say Torin, which we know Torin Square was named after, had brought his power south after the fall of the two kings on the Field of Fire. But when he saw Aegon's dragon and the size of his host, he chose the path of wisdom and bent his frozen knees. Mm. And just the knowledge of the history that... First, it's Sir Cleos who's talking about this, and then it changes to Jaime, who's continuing on his story. And I know we'll talk more about what Jaime had to go through. With the Mad King, but it's just kind of the fact that you could be in this situation, like you said, Zach. They just came off nearly being killed, saw a bunch of people hanging from trees,
right?
And now they're here trying to continue upon their quest, and yet. There's still all this Westerosian history that's interwoven throughout the story.
Yeah, and I can feel it. I can feel not only what they were discussing regarding the actual sign of the end, but I can feel the tension in the air. Not just because Jaime is a captive. I mean, I understand his crossness toward Brienne in a lot of ways because she's the person that is taking him. In chains. You know what I mean? Like, he's not exactly on a casual friendly trip with her. So it's a little different. If it was maybe just another guy and Sir Cleos, or maybe just Sir Cleos, I have a feeling that Jaime would have someone to pick on either way. So I don't think it's only because she's a big cow in his eyes. I just think that makes the target a little bit easier, which, again, isn't very nice or fair. But, I mean, they're in the middle of... The War of the Five Kings. They can't even approach an inn without wondering how many people might kill them, or if they go in there, how many people are dead. So it's different.
Yeah.
And learning so much more of what was in Jamie's head in this chapter, and I never thought that we would see the throne room scene like we did in this chapter. So I was very, very pleasantly surprised that it came, and it came without fervor, and it came without warning, and it was just really nice to read all that happened.
Yeah,
it is about half the throne room scene I was expecting. I will say that. I mean, in the book, he just has more time to kind of lay it out and have it gradually be learned, you know?
Right.
I mean, I feel, because he does, I guess he kills Aerys in the chapter, you see him, like, have that be done, but it's not quite to the level of detail. I expect it to be filled in more later, especially if he does, in the books, confess it to Brienne the way that he did, you know, a little later on in
the show.
That's
the impression I got, that there would be a part two or three to that.
Yeah, but it's definitely awesome to see. And I mean, just the idea, this concept that the innkeeper, in air quotes, the innkeeper, told them which direction or which road would be better, and that they couldn't go by water, etc. Just this notion that he could be setting up for a trap, or more than likely is setting them up for a trap based on the horses and all that stuff, is pretty, like, fascinating to me, because in this day and age, you just don't expect to be misled. But like, you stop at a gas station, right, you ask for directions, they're not going to, like, you know, you fill up your car, they're not going to tell you to take, like, the wrong road so that you just see that you get ambushed by, like, friends of theirs. You know, unless you're somewhere...
Movie.
Yeah, unless it's a scary movie or you're way in the deep south or like the far west. I feel like that kind of thing doesn't happen now. But these characters are so astute and they're so ready for that to happen. And maybe that's Jaime being smart. Maybe that's Brienne. But that's just kind of the world that they live in, is that they have to constantly wonder if the information that they got is going to be accurate.
Yeah, and it's all this war. I don't know that it's necessarily Westeros. It's just the fact that they can't trust anyone, because right, there's this war going on and everyone's out for themselves. There's like a tiny scrap of land somewhere in this chapter where Jamie's like, this is a place that the war hasn't touched. And then it just happens to be the middle of the wilderness and there's no dead bodies around. That's the definition of the war not having touched the place.
Right.
So it's like, I don't see any corpses here, so this is a peaceful land.
Yeah.
But then, and that's literally the line, that's the bar that they're having to exceed at this point. So the fact that there's so much war going on, yeah, of course they're gonna have to be really naturally suspicious of people, because everyone's out to basically loot and make money and stay alive. And that's not necessarily where we're at in modern day America anyway.
Not yet.
And I think we got a bit of this in the last chapter too, and we saw it in the show as well. But even when they're talking with the innkeep, or the supposed innkeep, right? Because Brienne points out he was no innkeep. My Brienne voice. I'm practicing for Halloween.
That sounds pretty good.
Pretty good.
Can't wait till you dress up as Brienne.
Yeah,
the fact
be awesome.
That there's really no difference, right, in terms of how he sees it between lion or wolf or fish, right? They're all the same, you know, and they're afraid of any of them, really, you know, and because I think, you know, as fans of the Starks, right, we tend to look at them as being good. And I know we've had this discussion before, but it's all really so subjective, because they're all out there in one way or another looking to kill each other and looking to even take advantage of others along the way. And I think that we're reminded of that over and over and over again, especially in Jamie's story here.
Notice how brilliantly Jamie dodges the question. I mean, they open the door to the inn, they get a crossbow in the face, and this boy says, lion, fish, or wolf. And Jamie just smiles or grins his toothy grin and says, we were hoping for Capon. Actually, he dodges the question so brilliantly.
Well.
And yeah, I mean, it's pretty damn good. These chapters are always a joy to read because of that.
And it's not like they could hide the fact that their boat had Tully colors on it. It was an interesting question, because the innkeep, who's not an innkeep, points it out. He's like, I see your boat's got Tully colors on it. And Brienne's like, yeah, we came from River Run. Like, they can see with their own eyes the most likely affiliation of these people, but they still ask the question.
It's lucky that, they could have killed somebody, though. Here's the good thing is, because if that doesn't work out in their favor, if whoever hates the Tullys is, like, guarding this inn, they could just say, oh, we killed some Tully men, you know, and took their boat.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of how that works in such a cool way. So I think, though, it's a good thing that the Tullys, at least to me, seem like the Goldilocks of the houses. Like, they're just right.
I would think it'd be somewhat dangerous to still be going down the river on a boat with the Tully sigil on it, especially as you move closer and closer to King's Landing in areas where it's been known that the Mountain and others are raping and pillaging.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, should they have stripped the paint from their sails or gotten new sails?
No, it doesn't matter now. I mean, they're not using the boat
anymore. Yeah, the boat's gone, right? But
listen, they got horse steak, they got stale oat cakes, hard bread, they got onions cooked in horse steak grease. I mean, you can't ask for much.
I can't wait till I get the Game of Thrones cookbook for Christmas.
I'm literally holding it right now.
Oh, really? Yes. Do they have stale oat bread in the Game of Thrones cookbook? Is it like bake oat bread, wait 3 weeks in open air,
and
you get what Jamie was having?
Just thumb through it and see.
Did you guys pick up also in the, there's one part where Jamie says that Brienne reminds him of Tyrion?
Yes.
Yeah. She's a pretty high compliment.
Very high compliment, yeah.
I mean, in Jamie's eyes, especially, because we know how he feels about not only his brother, but also Tyrion as an individual. And I think that in this case, what he was sort of sneering about, if we could squeeze the good connotation out of it, which is much more pleasant to talk about, I think that he's saying that she is not comfortable in her own skin in a way that Tyrion is, you know, unfortunately this. In her mind, she's unfortunately this and would rather be this, and maybe he would rather be this. I'm being vague, but I think we all understand where this is leading. They are good people that are sort of being, I don't want to say punished, but are definitely not being treated as good as other people because of what they are. And they've both decided to say screw it and not let that slow them down. So that's cool.
There's this wonderful flashback for Jaime when he's remembering why he joined the Kingsguard in the first place. Because they mentioned several times during the chapter that he was the youngest Kingsguard to ever take the cloak. He was 15 when he said his vows, which is crazy.
Yes.
When you think about it, a 15-year-old kid getting sworn to be one of the most elite protectors in the land. But the reason that he did it was because Cersei convinced him with her womanly ways to give up on his holdings.
Bone down on him.
To bone down. Yeah, she was, he came to visit her and he was like, hey, what's up? How are you doing? She's like, you should come here and live in King's Landing because I'm stuck here having to find suitors and I don't want to be here by myself because there's nobody to bone me.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I kind of am the heir to Casterly Rock, so I think I'm going to go. She's like, no. Because then you could take the white and then you could just be next to me forever and we could bone all the time. And he was like, And she's like, let me convince you later. And then they meet up and have sex all night long. And he wakes up and he's like, this is a great idea. I'm 15.
Yeah.
So he joins the Kingsguard and Tywin is so pissed off that he immediately resigns being the Hand of the King.
Right.
And just goes back to Casterly Rock and brings Cersei with him. And Jaime's like, what?
Think about
this. But now.
Cersei had a great line. Is it a rock you want or me? Which should not be overlooked because I think that's pretty brilliant. But the fact that Tywin foils their plans again raises the question for me of like, how much does Tywin know?
Tywin knows. I mean, I don't think Tywin is a stupid man by any stretch. And I liked how the TV show painted it such that he was blinded by his family honor in thinking that there's no way that this could be possible.
He was in
denial.
But
I also know that for as good as Tywin was in battle, he was an even better tactician. And there's no way with the amount of people that he had feeding him information that he didn't know that this was going on. That's my personal belief.
And then this is Jaime's life from then on. And Tywin gives him shit later on in life. He's like, well, you're not going to be the heir to Casterly Rock. So like, you know, you're kind of not even my son. And so like, it's kind of fucked up that Jaime did this because he was so in love with his sister, that he wanted to just be near her.
But the alternate option was Lysa Arryn. I mean,
he really dodged a bullet there. She was actually not bad looking.
She was hot back then.
She was pretty good looking.
She was right up there with Kat. They were both young and attractive. So it was not for dread of Lysa Arryn that he did this. It was definitely because he was pretty sweet on Cersei and he didn't want to be without her.
Yeah.
But that's why he made the decision to be without husband or lands, without husband or wife or husband, you know,
or any of it,
without spouse or lands or titles. Just he gave up an entire future, children, everything else that he should have been entitled to because he wanted to continue sleeping with his sister. That's how powerful her vagina is.
Wow.
Like, it's amazing.
That's a good spare purse, I'd have to say.
Yeah. That's coming in the next chapter.
Oh, man.
How about also, you know, in talking a little bit about the history of Westeros, this is more backstory than anything else, and it was not something that I remembered, but as Jaime is recounting everything that's going on, we learn how Sir Ilyn Payne lost his tongue.
Yeah.
Basically by saying, right. Tywin's the man, Aerys. He rules the Seven Kingdoms, not you.
I don't know if he said it to Aerys. It sounded like he was more like saying it in a pub. He was like, yeah, you know what? Who actually rules is the king's hand.
Yeah, you got to be careful.
Sir Ilyn
Where
Payne's
do you
tongue.
Say those things?
Torn out just for boasting that it was the hand who truly ruled the Seven Kingdoms.
Doesn't it suck to not have free speech, guys?
Well, I mean, I think Aerys was just crazy. I think there's because there's that saying in the first book where they're like the king eats and the hand takes the shit. So I think that's a saying now that's saying like, well, the hand actually deals with all of the serious business, and the king just gets to piss off and have fun. So it's not an uncommon way of thinking, apparently, and it has passed down through the generations of kings that we've seen in the Seven Kingdoms. It's just that Aerys was nuts, so he took a rather severe approach.
Do you guys think that Tywin really left just because Jaime and Cersei went behind his back and submitted him and he was accepted and all of that great gallantry? Do you think he was that pissed off?
No, I think he was pissed off that his chosen son, his golden, handsome son, was not going to be the one to inherit Casterly Rock and give him grandsons.
Right.
I think that's what made him angry. That's his whole thing, right? Is Tywin's obsession with family. I don't think it had anything to do necessarily with Jaime and Cersei sleeping together, certainly not directly.
Do you think that possibly he saw that as a pretty nice opportunity to resign and make it seem like it was for this emotion and what's going on with his kids? And maybe he saw the oncoming threat. Maybe he had an idea that there was unrest and that discord would eventually lead people to the capital.
Well, like Micah was just saying, if nothing else, Tywin is an incredible tactician.
Exactly.
And very well informed. So yeah.
So he got the hell out of Dodge.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking when I read it. I just didn't think that Tywin, when it said that Tywin, when the book literally said, left King's, just resigned being Hand of the King because of this, I was like, bullshit.
Yeah,
bullshit.
That's true. Major bullshit.
He did not just resign. I'm out of here. Just going home.
Like, right, especially with how much power being the Hand confers onto him. That must have been quite a sacrifice.
Yeah, interesting and brave of him to do, because the Mad King could have responded in any way. So
yeah.
I'm interested to know the exact setup of what happened there. But I mean, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. They both shit when they died.
It is true. Yeah. I didn't notice that that similarity before. But that's
totally right. Yeah, his recollection of killing Aerys is pretty funny. Mm-hmm. Actually, he comes in and he's got his bloody sword, and Aerys asks him who the blood belongs to, and he's like, it's your hand, it's the hand of the king, I just killed him and I'm here to kill you. And Aerys like literally starts screaming and pooping at the same time, which,
and running shit sprint.
And running up to the throne, which is not a shit sprint. Shit sprint all
it's
over
like that
King's
scene,
Landing.
Have you guys ever seen Dumb and Dumberer?
Oh yeah.
When
Harry met Lloyd, the prequel?
There's shit everywhere. All over the wall.
No, I am.
We'll
proud
share
to say
that with you guys later. But
you know how Jaime has his word for Brienne that she doesn't like wench. Yes. Well, Jaime doesn't like it when she calls him Kingslayer. Right. And leading into this backstory of, you know, King Aerys, she does, or actually he says they're both Kingslayers. And that's kind of an interesting character moment there, because he's blaming Brienne, obviously, for the death of Renly, and she blames a shadow, and he says, oh, how rich to be able to blame a shadow. Like, what if I had just blamed a shadow? Right. Why did they have to see me killing the king? It's really an interesting interplay between them both, and I was reading it and just thinking, oh, yeah, wow. I guess a lot of people, or there are people who do think that Brienne killed Renly.
I don't even know if Jamie necessarily believes that she actually did it, but he is in that moment trying very hard to piss her off.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
So I think he's just saying whatever he can to get a rise out of her.
He wanted that dagger. To her.
Remember, he wanted to stab her with that dagger.
Yeah.
He was like ready.
He wanted her to get close so he could snatch her weapons.
And- but this is really one of those chapters for Jamie now that we're being able to see from his perspective. People's perspectives, readers' perspectives, really start to change about him, because I think, he puts it best early on when he's talking to Brienne, where he says, "Don't presume to judge what you don't understand." And as he begins to tell the story and you begin to learn the truth, and there's, the whole backstory, which we've already discussed about, him wanting to be with Cersei, I think you start to understand him a little bit better than you did before. And Brienne constantly coming across to him as being this nag, basically, always calling him the Kingslayer, even when he apologizes from time to time to her, calls her by her first name, she still refers to him as Kingslayer. Mm-hmm. And I think that's
not fair.
Well, no, not that it's not fair, but the more that you learn about Jaime's past and what really happened, I think the more he becomes a character that people can actually feel some sort of empathy for.
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting way to get to know a character this deep into the, we're in the third book right now, and he's been around since the first royal visit to Winterfell back in book one. So it's interesting to, I think we could have all drawn conclusions, just like we do on many characters that aren't point of view, of what kind of people they are, the ins and outs of their psyche. But with Jaime being captured and being in chains, there's not many opportunities for us to get to know him outside of his just making fun of Brienne and sounding like a fool. So this was a really great way that George integrated things that we care about, but also a way for us to get to know this character in such a really strong way. So that was just really brilliant, I thought, weaving it in with things like mentioning Ned Stark, walking into the throne room, things like that. I think it was just a really smart way to make Jaime change for so many of us.
And I'm sure that Jaime had killed before he got to the throne room. Years and years of training and that's all that. But he does say that he has this remarkable insight. A king should die harder than this.
Oh, yeah.
Because he remarks that killing Aerys was easy. It was a single slash across the throat. He was dead. He was already lost all of his dignity, running around, shit staining everything. So it's just an interesting insight, because in the moments immediately after Aerys' death, the just seeing step by step what goes through Jaime's mind and his actions, Roland Crayhall comes in and says, "Who, should we proclaim a new king? What's going on?" And Jaime doesn't actually tell them, because there's a choice. He can just say, "Oh yeah, so and so is the new king." He doesn't actually tell them. He says, "Proclaim who you like. Proclaim who you bloody well like," he told Crayhall. But then he has that moment where he sits the Iron Throne anyway. So and that's of course when Ned, we've learned this, I remember from the show, Ned talking about coming and finding Jaime on the throne and like feeling like he's like a smart ass or something, and it like kicks him off of it. But Jaime is just having a rest. Like he's just having like, this is hard, like thinking about what he's just done. We know that it wasn't exactly for the same reasons that Ned interpreted when Ned eventually bursts into the throne room and pulls him off of it.
I'd love to sit here and talk about how misunderstood this man is, but at the end of the day, Jaime's misunderstandings are 100% to blame for his outward actions and the way he interacts with people. I think that we learned from the television show that he's humbled in a lot of ways once his hand is removed. And, maybe in his case, it took some trauma to firmly deflate his head a bit and plant it squarely on his shoulders. But you can't blame Ned for thinking, from what he knew of Jaime Lannister up until that point, he looked at the throne and he saw Jaime, et cetera, et cetera. And like you said, in Jaime's mind, there was so much weight that was happening just before. He had only, all this was going on, and it's such a big deal to someone that really shouldn't have even been in this position, that was regrettably continuing to stay in this position, because his plan, the entire reason that he did it, was pulled out underneath him immediately. So yeah, this was a very informative chapter.
Yeah. And the line at the end, tying back to what he said to Brienne, that Ned had no right to judge him. And we don't necessarily know fully why that is, until later on when we learn what we learned in the show. But there was one other thing I just wanted to bring up, which was as it related to the Kingsguard. It says that Jaime had been Lord Tywin's son long before he had been named to the Kingsguard. And I just wondered, do you think that that's a trend? Because obviously everybody who's in the Kingsguard that we know of has family. Do you think their loyalty at the end of the day is going to lie more with their family as opposed to their sworn brothers
and protecting the king? Once they've taken the oath?
Yeah. It's kind of like the Night's Watch in a way.
It's making me think of the next chapter too.
It is like the Night's Watch, but it's also different in a really fundamental way, which is I think that you have I believe it's totally your choice to join the Kingsguard. The Wall is kind of like, okay, you were caught stealing a ton of food, you were caught killing this guy, go to the Wall and you get to live.
Or you're Jon Snow.
Right.
Or you're Jon Snow, go to the Wall. But I feel like the Kingsguard is like, no, you're actually vowing. Like, it's a different, it's the same honor. Vow. The vow is the same, but it's something that I don't think people are forced to protect. I feel like it would be bad policy if people who didn't want to be in the Kingsguard didn't want to forsake their family. With Jaime, it's like, cause he's kind of, I don't know if he's holier than thou, but like he went into it for like, Jaime was able to go into the Kingsguard for selfish reasons. Which is like, it's like a selfless job position, but he was able to do it so that he could stay in the city, obviously. So that's why I think, and ultimately because he went into it for romance, which is not something anybody else really does in the Kingsguard. That's why he was able to side more with his family at the end of the day.
Well, how do we do this? How do we go, oh, Jaime, how do we go to your brother now? I guess that's how we do it.
Make sure you say it in that accent.
I was just
from
thinking.
One Lannister to the other.
Oh, what a weekend. We partied on Tarth.
Brother to brother.
Brother.
Bone down.
Two brothers.
This is the bone down chapter.
Oh God, guys.
There was some uncomfortable bone down.
When did this happen, right? I mean, there's been, and I'm not scared of love making, by all means. Listen to our bonus episode this month that'll be coming out next week.
Oh my.
Right? Remember that stuff? Yeah. But it was a bit graphic, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of stiffening.
Excessive.
It's Varys's bed. It's Varys's bed is like rock, right? So stiff.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's one of the stiff things that's in this chapter. I don't have a lot to say about this chapter, except that Varys is interesting. He's such an interesting character. He's quite different in this chapter from the portrayal of Varys that we see on the show. He's like when this chapter begins.
Just read it. Do it.
I'm going to do it. The eunuch was humming tunelessly to himself as he came through the door, dressed in flowing robes of peach-colored silk and smelling of lemons. When he saw Tyrion seated by the hearth, he stopped and grew very still. My Lord Tyrion came out in a squeak, punctuated by a nervous giggle. That whole sentence, that's not the Varys that I know. He's surprised clearly by Tyrion, but he's like, my Lord Tyrion, that's not the Varys. It's like this goofy dude.
It's like Pee Wee Herman or something.
The rest of the Varys exchange in this is pretty good.
I guess in the show, it's more snake oil salesman, right? Like, oh, my Lord Tyrion,
exactly.
How's it going?
He would be like taken aback, but there probably would be no nervous giggling. I can't remember a single time when we saw Varys giggle. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Varys is interesting in this chapter because he is clearly giving Tyrion as much information as Tyrion is giving to him, which is, I think, a strange position for Varys to put himself in, considering Tyrion is not
cool
anybody
anymore.
Yeah, he's not. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be passing any laws or getting a lot of information that Varys would find useful. But it's some kind of loyalty or friendship, I suppose, that Varys feels that he has with Tyrion, or he has faith that Tyrion's power will be restored at some point.
Or he's really spying for Tywin.
He's really spying hard for Tywin.
Spy hard.
He's getting this info from Tyrion, I'm sure, the stuff about Shay still being somebody that he wants to hook up with. Like, that's not a great thing for Varys to know. But Tyrion is also, he's betraying how much he doesn't know, which is very informative for Varys. Varys is kind of feeding him whatever he feels like. So it's an interesting exchange when you read it with that kind of tension between the two of them, when you read it from the perspective of Lord Varys trying to extrapolate as much information as he can out of Tyrion as much as Tyrion is him. It's a fun dynamic.
You know, it's funny for me that just before Varys does arrive back at, I guess, his quarters, Tyrion was actually not trashing the place, but like scouring the place for Varys's intel and for secret passages. I just thought that was like a really cool way for Tyrion to spend his time. And he's convinced that Varys has these passages, but mm-hmm. for however long he was looking, he couldn't find them. And it's cool for Varys to just
bed, stupid.
Be able to leave his room like this and not worry about people finding anything. I don't know. It's like he keeps the secrets all in his head or something.
Smart guy.
But it's kind of fascinating. And you just see how, I mean, Tyrion in the meantime is getting ignored by people. He's still on the mend. He has this huge scab where his nose used to be. You know, they're on completely different levels, and yet they do, as you said, Kate, they exchange information.
They have a little bromance.
Like equals. Well, it's like, I know we know this, it's like spelled out more in the show, but knowing that Varys does want good things for Tyrion or believes that Tyrion is good for the kingdom.
Maybe bromance is not, that's more him and Bronn, but I think there's mutual respect between the two of them, and I think Varys has a very deep appreciation for what Tyrion did during his time as Hand of the King. And I think that is what continues to work in Tyrion's favor. I don't know that Varys will give Tyrion any more information than he needs to know at certain times, but just the initial conversation that he has with him, us learning that Pycelle is being restored, things are going backwards very quickly for Tyrion. Of course, we remember that he chopped off his beard and sent him to the Black Cells in a clash of kings. And part of the reason why I brought up what I did earlier about the Kingsguard is because there's a brief part of the conversation between Tyrion and Varys about the Kingsguard. And, you know, Sir Barristan gets mentioned, Sir Mandon Moore. And I think that it ties in a little bit with what I was saying earlier in terms of, is there 100% loyalty to the crown, or are we going to see more people? Have we seen in this case those people decide to disobey what they're supposed to be doing for some other greater good?
I picked up what you were saying earlier. I was thinking about how it sort of felt like, not exactly, but Supreme Court justices, where their political party really shouldn't matter because they're supposed to be just abiding by the strictures of what the system is, and their entire job is about being this voice of a document that is not partisan. And that's kind of the same thing here. Their job is very clear, and their guidelines are very clear, and their past is very whatever. But in this case, we've got Barristan making a comment about someone, Sir Mandon Moore, that did not have anyone or anything around him at the Capitol that would allow him to be attached to anything. And the only guess here was possibly, did he have a strong allegiance to where he was from? And in this case, Varys is basically just trying to give Tyrion a few more options in his chase for who set the person upon him during the battle to kill him.
Right. And I guess you could argue the point, well, Cersei is the crown, so if Sir Mandon Moore is following her orders, even if it is to kill her own brother, I guess he is doing his duty because it's in the best interest, quote-unquote, of the king.
Is that really what the Kingsguard does, though? Aren't they just supposed to defend the king?
Right, and you could argue that, but I think that, you know, the Kingsguard has become a bit of a mockery ever since, you know, the incident with Jaime and the Mad King. Mm-hmm. I think we've seen a lot of people come and go through the Kingsguard. The Hound is another example, and those that will join the Kingsguard moving forward as vacancies become available.
Right.
you know, they're not these proud knights. They're these kind of, I wouldn't even want to taint the term hedge knight but they're not of the same caliber. They're not of the same quality. They don't have that same integrity.
They may have skills, but yeah, their integrity is just, I think it has a lot to do with who's king at the moment, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have skills, but Cersei's purse is paying the bills.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and we see it we see it with the reappointment of Pycelle to the council, is that they don't want the other guy from Highgarden to do it. And it's in fact, Tywin more so than Cersei, Varys tells Tyrion that Tywin quickly correct the issue because they want they want more Lannister men. They want people who are loyal to them, and none of these damn enough of these Tyrells and enough of these Highgardens and enough of these people who aren't Lannister in the court and things. So I think that following Blackwater too, where everybody who performed well gets a knightship and a lordship and this, that, the other thing. Like they're just beginning to staff it because they're feeling a little caged in. They're feeling a little vulnerable. So they're staffing the Kingsguard with people who are not necessarily the best in battle or the most prestigious, as Micah was saying, but just people who they know they can count on.
And then you've got the Kettle Blacks, and a particular Kettle Black.
How cool is that? Varys is like, you know, they're following you and reporting back, right? Yeah. And Tyrion was like, I just saw them today. What?
We had a drink outside. They were like, yeah. Hey, how are you healing up, buddy?
What the hell? I thought they were just nice guys.
Yeah, they're not. They're not.
Just nice guys. They were just
Yeah, one
gross.
Of them is really trying to bang your sister. Probably all three of them. But one of them definitely thinks he has a chance to bang your sister. And that's the guy you got to look out for.
Oh, man.
Right?
Yes. And we've got the Knight of Flowers, too, who's now Kingsguard.
Well, he's pretty good. What were you going to say,
Kate? He asks, we've been making references to this, so I just wanted to read the quote, but he asks Varys, Tyrion asks Varys if he might be able to buy back the Kettle Black's loyalty. And Varys says a few things, and then he says, you can match the queen coin for coin, I have no doubt, but she has a second purse that is quite inexhaustible. The purse is her vagina.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Which is like, she uses that thing a lot. Maybe that's just that's the way it is in Game of Thrones, and you know, sex is something that's definitely a currency, but Cersei especially, she has used at least the whisper of sex to get her way in a lot of different areas, even in these last two chapters. We can't go two chapters in a row where we're hearing about Cersei flinging her cat at people.
Yeah, get out of here.
Meow.
Sir Pounce, come back.
Cersei's name for her vagina.
Sir Pounce. Wow.
That's more of a command, not even a name. Sir Pounce. Yeah.
Sir. But things really are reversing for Tyrion, right? Because we left him, you know, he obviously had a major fall from grace at the end of A Clash of Kings, but now we're seeing not just the physical side of what he went through and you know, the injuries that he suffered, but you know, the chapter starting out, and like I said, Grandmaster Pycelle coming back and learning that all these people that he's wronged are now getting back some level of power. The mention of Janos Slynt's sons would gladly inform upon him for him sending, you know, Janos to the wall. You know, the Baelish has friends in half the brothels that would spy on him. And that even Varys, you know, has to report on him in some way to Tywin.
Right.
And that's not even counting Cersei's spies, the Kettle Blacks, and who knows who else. So Tyrion is really just, I mean, he's in a tough spot.
Yeah, and this brings me, Micah, to a thought that I had while reading this. And I understand that he is fresh from a lot of trauma, but with all of these things we've just discussed, the next thing you may be wondering, what could possibly happen now that Tyrion has learned so much more and that they've exchanged this conversation? Surely he's going to get back to work, because that's the Tyrion we've come to know over the past two books, especially in the last one.
Mm-hmm.
He asks Varys, when's the next time he can arrange a play date with Shay?
Mm-hmm. A play date.
But I think his play date, he was intending to tell her, yo, you got to leave. And he tries to, but he can't resist again.
I guess that's
the
true.
Womanly wiles. I think he wanted to tell her in person, like, I have to send you away. You're not safe here.
Right.
Because his father's going to hang her if he finds out that she exists. But instead, she's like, oh, my Lord Lion. I would like to writhe erotically around on this hard bed.
People said that she was more like stone in the books. People said that. But I don't see it. I feel like even in the book, it packs an emotional wallop where you feel like she really likes him a lot. Oh,
that's exactly the opposite of what I felt. I just feel like I see through her completely, and I'm just I'm just disappointed at him the whole time.
She just wants to be in King's Landing. Buddy.
She wants to be in King's Landing, it's and she so wants obvious. To wear fancy dresses and cool jewelry.
Can you get my gold and jewels that's like back?
Literally
now that
the first thing
over?
She asks him.
Oh, I've fallen for it, guys.
Harry.
I've
She's
fallen for the womanly wiles.
Jeez, buddy.
So you're saying it's obvious in the book then, in this chapter.
I was mad at Tyrion because of how just blaringly painfully obvious it was.
Nobody's being nice to him though. Put yourself in that situation. Your face is all fucked up. Everybody mistrusts you. Some people just straight up want to kill you. And there's a pretty lady who is going to like suck your dick and tell you that you're awesome. Like, of
course, and call you a giant, my giant of Lannister. Yeah.
I understand all of that, but it goes back to my point before. Like, I feel for him, I get that he's got lots coming to him due to what he's been through. And he deserves a certain amount of sympathy. But at the same time, he was playing with fire. He was the Hand of the King last time, and he made some ballsy decisions. And he also helped save the kingdom and his entire family. So there's that. Mm-hmm. But now is not the time. I mean, I understand absolutely about sending Shay off and him needing a face-to-face for that, but I felt like the way he set this up was he said, I want to see her one last time before I tell her to leave. So I guess it all just kind of conveniently worked out, but he should know better. I just think that the Tyrion we've come to know, especially with his history and what he's been through already, should probably be a little bit more vigilant when it comes to his relationships with prostitutes.
Yeah. Well, if there's one thing that we know, it's that Tyrion isn't terribly careful when it comes to matters of the heart.
Yeah.
He's had a little bit of a history with prostitutes and falling for them for some reason. That's just his thing. So he's less guarded around Shay than he should be. I don't think he takes his father terribly seriously, or maybe he does and he tries to send her away, but then he's like, my father can't actually do anything to her or whatever. I don't know. He's all messed up in the head. He's probably got a concussion. We don't know.
He can't smell anything anymore.
So. Yeah. Smell danger? Can't do it.
Can't do it.
So the rest of this chapter is just mostly X-rated.
Pretty good banging.
Yeah, it seems pretty good. But he's like, I can't give you your silks back. She's like, well, maybe I can go to the wedding. He's like, you can't go to the wedding. She's like, I can go to the wedding. I can hide and nobody will notice. They're like, they're going to notice. And so they talk about this for a while. And then eventually she's like, okay, I accept everything you're saying, but I'm going to stay in King's Landing. And he's like, cool, immediately. It's just like the one thing that he wanted to set out and tell her that she couldn't do, she talked him into being able to do. And then I need you guys to jog my memory on something, because it's been a while since I've read those first two books. He hears her talking about Simon Silvertongue, this singer that she's befriended, and how he's told her all about the wedding and all the stuff, and he's been hired to play in the wedding. And apparently this sets off some alarms, because he goes and finds Bronn after their rendezvous. And he's like, Bronn, you need
rendezvous.
To find. Yeah, so then he has a rendezvous after their rendezvous. And he says, Bronn, I need you to go find Simon Silvertongue. But he contemplates saying, kill him, because he's probably jealous or whatever. But instead, what he says is just find him before anybody else does. But I can't remember why he feels so worried about Simon. Is it because Simon knows Shay's actual identity?
I feel like it should be jealousy, but I feel like it's also that he could identify Shay.
It's both. When they went to that brothel, if you remember, when he was like, I think there was bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
like Simon was playing some music and Tyrion was like, who's that guy? And they were like, ooh, that's Simon Silvertongue. And he's like, oh, fuck that dude. Shay's here. And also they probably know who each other are.
Yeah. And I would say that probably doesn't bode too well for Mr. Silvertongue.
You mess with the lion, you get the mane.
You know, before Shay and Tyrion separate, she does tell him where Varys hides the secret steps.
Where he hides his various secret steps.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not entirely sure that he hides the steps. I think
the steps are hidden.
Yes,
that's fair.
No, Tyrion's going around the room right after sex, and she's just watching him. He's like pounding on walls, and he's like, "I know they're here somewhere," and she tells him. That they're under the bed.
Yeah.
And that he cast a magic spell to make it
he's a magician.
Drift, yeah.
But it's clear Varys has a way of getting around the castle and knowing things that he shouldn't know. And I think that this idea that there are these secret passageways shouldn't be of any surprise.
He's got a marauder's map. That's what it is.
He does.
Yes.
And even earlier on in the chapter, Tyrion is somewhat surprised, even though he shouldn't be, to know that Varys has little birds in the Citadel. You know, right. All the way in Old Town, he shouldn't has everywhere. People who are reporting back to him. So Varys is a very, very much a power player.
Let me read you guys one passage here, because I have a question. It's between Varys and Tyrion. Tyrion is like, I need you to go get Shay. Tyrion, he says, Varys is like, but where? There's no safe place. There is, Tyrion grinned. Here, it's time to put that rock-hard bed of yours to better use, I think. The eunuch's mouth opened. Then he giggled. Lawless tires easily these days. She is great with child. I imagine she will be safely asleep by moonrise. Tyrion hopped down from the chair. Moonrise, then. See that you lay in some wine and two clean cups. Varys bowed. It shall be as my lord commands. Why in the hell does Varys do anything that Tyrion tells him to do?
Because he was the Hand of the King last.
He was. Yes, was is the key word there. Like, Tyrion has no power.
His sister is the queen.
Sure.
Even though he knows that they're not on good terms, I feel like you just don't fuck with the royal family.
I mean, Tyrion can't get anybody of power to do anything for him
at this
point.
Yeah, that's true. Well, okay, in my opinion, it's because Varys just likes Tyrion all that much. Yeah. Like,
I agree.
I mean, that's really, and he knows that Varys is sneaking through the castle and going through these hidden passages that he can't even find.
Sure.
After hours, so he's like, "Why don't you get Shay?" And he knows that that's something that Varys can accomplish.
Sure.
Deftly.
He just told Varys, like, "I'm gonna fuck a girl on your bed."
Oh yes.
And Varys right. is like, "Cool, bring me cups,
clean
like,
ones."
He's fine with it.
It's like that hasn't happened ever.
Maybe ever.
Ever.
Yeah. So and. It's just a weird thing to allow Tyrion to not only use Varys' abilities to get his prostitute in there, but he's like, yeah, you can bone her here. That's cool.
But what's Tyrion going to do? Dad, Varys won't let me fuck the whore on his bed.
Right.
Yeah, which whore? I need to hang a whore. That one will do.
I think it hinges on Varys liking Tyrion. You're probably right.
I think that it hinges on Varys not wanting to ruin any of the progress he's made over the course of his long life. Like, why even risk a small tiff with someone, anyone, not someone, even if he's not in the royal family, anyone, why risk that for this? It's not like Tyrion's asking a lot out of him, because if he fails at what he's doing, the whore is going to be who gets killed, not him. So it's just like, there's really no risk. The only thing that he's having to deal with is that Tyrion's going to squirm around in his bed for a little bit. So
I think, more than that. I think that the scene in the show, actually, to Derek's point about Varys liking Tyrion, when he smuggles Tyrion out after Tyrion commits his deed, and he gives that look when the bells sound and Varys turns around on the dock and he looks and he's like, oh boy, and he pieces out. Clearly, he does like Tyrion and has a vested interest in his success. So, yeah, that actually makes some sense. It's just weird to think of Varys doing anything for love rather than money.
Oh, yeah, you know? Absolutely. Because he's had to. He exists on, I'll do this. What will you do for me?
Exactly. Yeah. Which I suppose is just I'll do you this favor and you're going to owe me one later on.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that anything that Varys does ultimately helps to advance his own game. So I don't know if there's any real emotion tied into it. Not to say that he doesn't like Tyrion, but
no.
It does take a lot for him to have not only did what you just mentioned, but also the fact that he waited while Tyrion went up to kill Tywin and Shay, and then didn't just bounce, you know, didn't just leave. He could have. He didn't have to see Tyrion off to safety. I'm sure Varys, being the smart man that he is, had a very good idea what Tyrion was up to. So, I just...
That's a good point.
Think he's a man who looks to serve his own end and nobody else's. Mm-hmm. Or maybe somebody else's. Maybe we'll find out one day.
Yeah.
Maybe we will.
We can only hope. But until then, let us share our owns.
Shall we?
From Dos Chapitres.
Dos.
Dos Chapitres. I have one own for both chapters. Would you like to hear it?
Please.
Yes.
My own for both chapters goes to Cersei's vagina.
Who
may be the most, it might be the most powerful entity in the Seven Kingdoms.
It might be.
Nicely done, Kate.
Thank you.
You don't disappoint. Yeah. Everything you do is great.
How can you follow that?
Like this.
She just tied the two chapters together.
I know. It's a neat little fucking bow. Congratulations, Kate.
Everybody. No, it was a box. It wasn't a bow.
Thank you.
So, you don't know. Well, you go close ahead. A box with a bow. Okay? So
close it.
In the Jamie chapter, my own goes to the horse with one good eye. That foils Jamie's rescue. He actually gets on the horse. So the innkeeper says the horses aren't for sale, which is also should make you suspicious because he ends up, you know, buying. He ends up selling the horses. But Jamie even, you know, draws the short straw, gets the shitty horse. So he couldn't escape even if he at this point still wanted to. So even if Brienne weren't going the same direction that he would have gone, he can't really break from the pack because his horse sucks. So big own for that horse. And then Tyrion has been owned one too many times, apparently, by doves that are baked into cakes. Apparently this is a thing.
Oh, yeah.
And Tyrion knows to fear these cakes that they make with live birds inside of them, because apparently all they do is fly away, but up to, like, the rafters of wherever they are, and then shit all over Tyrion. So.
In the wine too.
That's not
big,
cool.
Big own to those doves.
You know, just as a side note, I have these seagulls where I park my car each day. Uh-huh. And they literally shit on my car all the time.
That must suck for you.
My own goes to Jamie and Brienne. I think that they were a partnership in this chapter, a partnership that maybe not knowing, but did so shut down the hopes and dreams of Ser Cleos Frey to rest horizontally on a feather bed. I just thought that his teamwork in this case, to shut this dude down and disappoint him, they did everything they can
teamwork
to decide.
Teamwork makes a dream work.
We shouldn't stay. So yes, teamwork makes the dream work. Remember it, folks. Mm-hmm. And also my own for Tyrion's chapter goes to Shay. She conveniently destroyed him in many different ways. So Shay, good job at just talking around a lot of obstacles. You did you're all right at everything that you do because it's working. Okay.
Apparently. For now.
You go, girl.
Yeah.
My Jamie own goes to Jamie. A
you
little
can't
bit
do that.
Of I can, you can't.
Yeah, I know.
The little lover's quarrel that they had, or the beginning of their long lasting lover's quarrel, when he says to her, "I earned my knighthood. Nothing was given to me. I won a tourney melee at 13 when I was yet a squire. At 15, I rode with Sir Arthur Dayne against the Kingswood Brotherhood, and he knighted me on the battlefield. It was the white cloak that soiled me, not the other way around. So spare me your envy. It was the gods who neglected to give you a cock, not me."
Yeah, that's a good line.
Now Tyrion.
Here we go. What you got?
Get it.
I'm just going to give the own to the hidden passageway under the bed.
Okay.
There you go.
That's fair.
Tyrion was looking for it for hours, I assume.
Or at least
maybe an hour.
At the very least.
Yeah. At the very least, seconds.
Yeah.
It owned Tyrion, and it frustrated him. How is Varys going about the that which is King's Landing, for the most part? He's sneaking around, man.
He is. He knows what he's doing. That's for sure.
He's got tunnels and caves.
He sure picked the right room, right? He's like, "I want that room." They're moving in with all his things to King. I want that one with the secret passage under the bed.
Well, he's been there longer than they have.
That's true.
He's got some Targaryen swag to him.
We have just a swath of things from you guys. This was a, is that a word, swath? Okay, good. Yeah. Well, we have that of things that you guys, I'm talking about the listeners. Hi, all of you at home that are listening right now. We're talking to you that you've written in, and we care to read them now.
So now we present to you, from our family to yours, the listener owns for this week. Simon Amundsen on Twitter says, "My own for Jamie 2 goes to the 10 times Jamie calls Brienne a wench in this chapter." Wow.
I wanted
Simon went and counted. Okay.
I counted like 3 and I stopped, Simon. I'm taking your word for it, buddy.
Yeah. Wench count. Ding. 10. Okay.
Susan Stacy gives her own to Storm of Swords, chapter 11, Jamie 2. "The Mad King owned Tywin while Jaime was still parted from Cersei. A burn and a bummer.
True story. Yonatan Alexander says, Jaime looking on the bright side of life, his witticisms is a definite own. I tend to agree with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that was a breath of fresh air, Yonatan.
Ram Dent says, Jaime too, own goes to Jaime for his comeback. Quote, why is this one in irons? Killed some crossbowmen.
You little kid. You kid.
What was this? You frigging kid.
I like he tries to give him advice at the end. He's like, try like a mace or a hammer. Yeah, you're gonna do a lot more damage. And the kid doesn't care. It's like, all right.
He's like, one bolt, dude. One bolt.
Yep. Trouble tweeted at us. Cersei totally owned this chapter. And Jaime, hashtag twincest. Hashtag plotting and scheming. Hashtag since 14. Hashtag she's a pro. Hashtag and a hoe.
Thanks, Trouble.
Trouble.
Thank you.
That's Trouble. Pretty good.
Not Dan H. His own goes to that lying ass slut Shay. No, okay. Do you that lying ass slut Shay? Or is he calling her an ass slut? I don't know. That lying ass. Oh, I get it. Lying ass. Lying ass is it. One concept. That lying ass hyphenated. Slut.
Okay. This is why the hyphen exists in English.
Not Dan H says, goes to that lying ass slut Shay. Hashtag B. Hashtag grudgingly.
You gotta censor that one. The just B.
That's a B. Thanks, Dan.
Oh, now I get it. Now that it's an abbreviation. Okay.
This one's from Aiden. He says, own for the innkeep who isn't an innkeep for robbing the wench blind but still directing his counsel at her, not Jaime or Cleos.
Yeah, he knew who was in charge.
He did catch up on that, right? He picked on.
Yeah.
And Jeff Lightfoot says, own for Jaime chapter goes to Aerys, who hated Tywin Lannister, but shared a common final act. Dropping a deuce.
Yes! Yes! This is the teacher.
This is the teacher?
Social studies chair.
The social studies teacher?
Yeah.
Yes!
Yeah,
Jeff Lightfoot!
You're a good man, Jeff.
Yeah.
Continue to exist. We'll be happy.
And then we have some from Facebook. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Such as Mike Burns. This is that line again, guys. Kid with a crossbow. Why is that one in irons? Jaime killed a crossbowman. Jaime owns left and right, even in shackles.
He does.
Yes, he does, Mike Burns. Thank you for saying that.
For now, left and right.
Oh, left and right. Oh, yeah.
Rachel Jenkins says, Jaime owned Robert's rebellion. This is a really good point.
Yeah.
Robert did kill Rhaegar. So maybe that's Robert's rebellion to him. It's just like, well, he was mad at Rhaegar, so he's going to kill Rhaegar.
Yeah.
So he might have owned that. But Jaime did kill the king and get Robert of an empty throne to sit on. So it's a good point.
Warm.
Rachel Jenkins. Huh.
Thanks, Rachel. Yeah. This one's from Teresa Kresge. She says, Tyrion always gets my own. Okay, so yeah, he did do a little owning in
that
chapter.
Was easy.
I'm trying to catch up to your chapter and podcast, full-time student, mom, blah, blah, blah. Teresa, thank you.
Thank you.
Keep fighting thank the good you. Fight, yeah, Teresa. Right. When you hear this episode in 6 months, just know that we liked your own.
Yeah. Yeah. Say hi to us, because hopefully we're, you know, in 6 months, it's just, yeah, just say hello.
Joey Warnell writes in to say, my own has to go to MuggleCast. Still
what?
Getting shout outs from Matthew Berry at the Fantasy Football Podcast in the 06010
zip code.
Mm-hmm. Now let's get them to shout out the Goo Podcast next.
Micah, right. Who's Matthew Berry?
That is the question, isn't it?
I guess he's on the Fantasy Football Podcast, right? Okay, cool.
Okay.
This is cool.
I do remember a couple of years ago, I'm sure he had very nice things to say about MuggleCast. I think it goes back to when we beat them out for a podcast award or we were...
Yeah.
Something to that effect. But he works for...
What are you up to, Kate?
Fantasy Football Podcast.
Just hanging out. So,
we here at Game of Owns are big NFL fans and we have football teams
huge.
That we're fans of and we play fantasy football. At least I do.
I don't.
So have us on the show one time. We'd love to hear what you got to say.
Simon Admonson by email says, my own of the chapter goes to Varys, peach robes and lemon perfume.
Oh, you know, sounds like it smells so good.
That's what I'm wearing right now.
Jacko from Budapest says, my own for the next Jaime chapter goes to Brienne for trusting her instinct and picking the path less traveled by, at least when it comes to outlaws.
Good. Very accurate. Solilani says, Owen goes to Varys. Not only does he prove to be the ultimate wingman to Tyrion, but he had little birds in the freaking citadel during a conclave. That's like having your own spies in the Vatican while they are choosing a new pope. Impressive. Yeah. Cheers.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Great point.
Very good. I like that. Plus, he is a very good wingman. I mean, she was brought literally to his house. It's like, not only did he help out, but he's my house and I'll sneak and pass.
He gave them a place and Yeah, absolutely.
Not even like the Ottoman. He said, yeah, you can use my bed.
Yeah, if you can call it a bed.
All right. All right. Last email comes from Nick Hartley, who says, my own ghost, Cersei. Her selfishness alone single-handedly changed the Seven Kingdoms. Surely no other White Cloak would have put an end to the Mad King, but the son of Tywin. I would also like to say that I listen to many podcasts on many different subjects, but Game of Owns is the one that fills me with giddy delight when I see the next episode is up.
Yay!
Giddy delight.
Nick Hartley.
Giddy delight.
Yeah. Nick Hartley does not so.
He says, P.S., please tell Kate to never stop laughing. The sheer joy in it is infectious.
I couldn't if I wanted to, Nick Hartley. Don't worry.
Well, I'm convinced. This has been fun.
This has been a good time. We have fun. We have
laughs.
We were
with the brothers. The brothers, guys.
Yeah.
What's the brothers? Our next chapter is Arya, which I'm really excited about.
Yeah. She's
Arya excited too?
Arya.
That she just howls. I'm sure it's all.
She does. But it's important that she has that connection.
It is important.
It could play a part later on in the series.
That's true.
Maybe.
So you listening at home, you know what to do. Write into us. Say hello. Keep listening. Tell your friends. All the cool stuff. We're all here together, sort of virtually connected. And that's basically the same bond that we have with you guys, except we're talking to each other. So, yeah, figure that one out. Mm-hmm.
Twitter.com/Game of Owns. Facebook.com/Game of Owns. Are some sites to go to for great times.
Email us, contact@gameofowns.com.
If you're interested in catching our second chapter of whatever it is that we end up calling it, head on over to patreon.com/goo/goo.
Nice.
Goo. Consider donating and joining our cause and becoming a bannerman and thinking about, you know, vanquishing evil $1 at a time.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Well, we like want to thank, one. We now have broken the 100 patrons mark. We want to thank everybody for their kindness and support.
I saw somebody tweeted us saying that they were the 100th. It's like Rusted Box Records was the 100th. Was that Twitter account was the 100th Patreonator.
Rusted Box Records.
Thank you.
Cool beans.
Thank you, number 100.
And there is one other way that you can get in touch with us and basically do what Nick did towards the end of that email. Which is leave us a review. It is now the month of October, so nothing less than 5 stars is acceptable on iTunes. And I just have one here I want to read because I think it's pretty good. It is 5 stars, of course. And
of course.
Very creatively, the title is, Hey, Listen. Zach will get that reference. I think he will too.
Listen. What do you want?
Video
and
games.
Their name is 3Femur4.
Huh.
Pretty good name.
And they say, Legend of Zelda, Harry Potter, and Lord of the Rings references on a Game of Thrones podcast? What more could a nerd girl want, Kate? These are all the best things in one brought to you in a hilarious and yet thought-provoking podcast. Do you like Game of Thrones? Do you like to laugh? Then open up your ear holes and find out why this Game of Thrones podcast is simply the best out there. With an articulate and diversified set of sullied and unsullied hosts who review all forms of media relating to Game of Thrones without spoilers, a book reader can remember what it was like reading for the first time, and a show watcher can see things from a different perspective and gain further insight into their favorite characters' motivations.
Ooh.
Do it. You'll be glad you did, and then you'll spend 2 months catching up like I did.
That was very sweet. Oh my gosh. That was very sweet.
Yeah.
That's a great review.
Thank you.
So thank you.
That was
thanks
very
to everybody leaving those reviews for
thank
us.
You, Navi. We'll just call you Navi.
Thank you, Navi. Thank you.
Eric, we'll explain it to you later.
I was waiting to break out with the Game of Thrones whistle again, the Western whistle to close. That was, I was poised. I was hovering by the mic going, you know, just breathing in, waiting for it.
Waiting for your big moment.
Clearly, guys, we are queued up to It's time for us to leave now.
You didn't recognize the tension?
We have to go now.
Yes. Yeah. It's time for us to leave. We have nothing but love for each and every one of you, except for me. Well, no, we do. So that's it. That's all.
Good night. Good night, everyone.
Sweet dreams, listeners.
We should do that thing where we say our names.
I'm Kate.
I did it.
Thank you, Kate. Bless your heart.
Should we do that?
I'm Eric.
I just did it. I can't be the only one. You can't be like, I'm Kate, and then play the fucking exit music. Everybody's got to say it now.
Okay. Micah, you cool with that?
Yeah.
I'm Zach. I'm Zach.
I'm Micah.
Good night, Eric.
Good night.
I'd go to Rangers.
Oh, boy.
Geldar, magic wand, make my monster grow.
Rita.